May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Sealed Room.
Tonight, we're headed to the shores of the Mystic River, specifically Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Right across the water from Boston. And wasn't that a movie, The Mystic River? Yeah, there was, Sean Penn,
I think.
Yes,
it was. Yeah.
But this one here, this area right across from Boston, it's one of those densely packed, deeply historic New England cities where the architecture has outlived generations of its inhabitants.
Exactly. Chelsea was originally settled back in 1624, so you got four centuries of human triumph, tragedy, and daily routine layered directly on top of each other. It's an industrial city that's literally burned to the ground and been rebuilt, most notably during the Great Chelsea Fire of 1908, which leveled a massive portion of the town. But when you walk the streets there, or you look at these old multifamily structures, you're sharing space with a very heavy history, a very cool background.
Right. And sometimes that history doesn't feel entirely relegated to the past, or as some might say in a more Buddhist philosophy, there really is no past. It's just
That's
what
right.
we're experiencing in a linear way. And, you know, we talk a lot in the show about how older buildings seem to retain a sort of atmospheric pressure or vibe or residue, like the walls have absorbed so much or too much.
Yep. And then when you pull up the floorboards, when you're doing some remodeling or renovation, which people are doing over and over, especially in multi-100-year-old structures, you find architectural anomalies, spaces that were walled off for reasons that no one alive can even remember, using whatever materials might have been scavenged from the wreckage or perhaps a large fire in the past.
Right, which is exactly the kind of environment we're looking at tonight, because this isn't just a brief, fleeting encounter with the unknown. It's a lifelong coexistence with something ingrained in the very structure of a home. And this is a massive house that served multiple intense purposes before it was ever broken up into apartments. As we're going to see, that's often the case through generations. It starts off being built for one purpose and then ends up being a domicile for others. And I'll just say, again, I had a lot of questions and things I would love to explore. But a question for you, Scott, when we get done with this, is that if there's something that seems like it was meant to be off limits by other people, would you want to open those things to explore, or would you just leave it alone and let it be closed up forever?
Oh, I think that's a subjective question there.
Well, we'll talk about that and more after you, sir, get done reading this next story.
Unlike many of the letters you receive, mine is not a singular experience. It's stretched across decades and in many ways continues. Please note, I do not consider myself a medium, nor do I have any power that the average person does not. Perhaps I just never trained my filter the way others have, or it could be a byproduct of the diminished filter associated with being ASD. I don't really know, But without further preamble, I'll begin here. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and was raised just across the harbor in Chelsea. The building I grew up in, at that time owned by my grandparents, was built in the mid-19th century as a clinic with a surgery in the basement. Toward the end of its life in this capacity, it served as a hospice. My mother raised me on bedtime stories of the entities in the house that she encountered growing up, not in a manner to create fear, but more of a matter of fact. So as I grew up experiencing the strange phenomenon in the house, I had no more reason to fear them than a child meeting a bunny for the first time after years of being read the tales of Peter Rabbit. It wasn't until years later that I realized through conversations with friends that I did not have a typical childhood. The building was three floors and a basement, and each floor had been sectioned off into its own apartment by the time I was born. Each apartment was occupied by family, so I had free range of the building growing up. Each level had its own dominant entity with their own behavioral patterns. My immediate family lived on the first floor, my aunt, uncle, and cousins on the second floor, and my grandparents on the third floor. On the first floor, among other strange phenomena, we had shadows that didn't belong to any people. I wouldn't exactly call them shadow people because they didn't match the typical stories I've heard that equate them to sleep paralysis demons or creations of an exhausted mind. These tended to stay in a specific part of the house, which would later become my bedroom after my sister was born, and happened to be directly above the entrance to the basement where the surgery used to be. Very likely, this basement door was the final departure point for everyone who passed on within those walls. Also, the family dog refused to go back there or into the basement, but seemed comfortable everywhere else in the apartment. There were always three of them, as far as I could tell, and they didn't vanish when you looked at them. They often just stopped moving. They also would whisper in the white noise of passing cars. As I grew up with them being a constant presence, I never feared them. In fact, I just assumed they were a normal, natural phenomenon. As to a young child, at some point, everything is new and unexplained, so you process new things based on how those around you react to them. I would often talk to them as if they were just non-corporeal siblings. And I honestly believe something like this is what many imaginary friends really are. Many people have told me they were a normal psychological phenomenon, figment of my imagination. But they interacted with physical objects. They would tease me by pushing toys off shelves or changing the channel on my old black and white turn knob TV if I fell asleep with it on. Normally, if I yelled for them to knock it off, they did. The second floor had an entity resembling a young girl who wanted to play with the children in the middle of the night. There never seemed to be any malicious intent, but my aunt would leave a small rubber ball in the hallway so that it wouldn't bother my cousins on school nights. If you were awake and near to the door, sometimes you heard a child's laughter and the sound of the ball bouncing. This is the entity I had the least interaction with until years later. After my grandfather died when I was about 9 years old, I moved into the spare bedroom on the third floor so that my grandmother wouldn't be alone. This was the first time I encountered an entity in the house that frightened me, besides the basement, but that's a story for another time. Prior to that, I had never stayed on that floor overnight, so I had never seen this one before. I ended up calling it the Mangled Man. It appeared to be a massive man in old-fashioned laborer's clothing. My room was just off the kitchen, and my grandmother had two rules. A small light in the kitchen always stayed on, and I was not allowed to close the bedroom door at night. Every night, the silhouette of this man would walk in front of my door, the kitchen light visible through it. It would peer in the bedroom door for a moment, then continue on its way. A few times, I waited for my grandmother to fall asleep and closed the bedroom door as I didn't want to see it. And before I even had time to settle into bed, she would be there opening the door and scolding me for closing it. She never explained why this was so important. After my grandmother died, my mom took ownership of the building and began renovations with the intent to rent the apartments out. As a teenager at the time, I ended up working with her boyfriend, who was a contractor, to do the work. Just the two of us, with occasional help from one of my friends. He had not spent any significant time in that house, as we had moved out sometime before he was really in the picture. So, of course, he was adamant that my experience in the house was all in my head. That is, until he started experiencing things too. On the first floor, the fresh paint would develop strange shadowy stains in my old bedroom, and every morning, all the doors on the newly installed kitchen cabinets would be open. On the second floor, we would hear small footsteps in nearby rooms, and tools would get knocked off workbenches when no one was in the room. and ladders leaning against walls would get pushed over sideways. I was never really sure if that entity was upset its environment was changing or if it was just trying to play. Nothing was ever damaged, and it never happened in direct line of sight to either of us. And the third floor was a different matter altogether. Growing up, there was a closet in the hallway on the third floor, just outside the apartment. My grandparents told me never to play in there, and I always assumed it was because there was something in there they didn't want me to damage. But the closet itself always gave me and everyone else who passed it an uneasy feeling. So I never had a desire to go inside anyways. It wasn't until the renovation, when we had to remove the closet to meet code, that I began to understand why it bothered me. When I was tasked to dismantle the closet while my mom's boyfriend worked on a completely different floor of the building, of course, the first task was to remove the door. This was the first time in my life I had ever looked closely at the door. That's when I realized it had three large sliding deadbolts on the outside. There was no way to lock any of them, so clearly this wasn't to keep anyone else. Why were these there? After removing the door and peeling back the wallpaper, I could see the closet was hastily built with random offcuts of wood and a variety of different sizes and types of nails. After removing the bulk of the structure, I got to the back wall, which was made of two massive slabs of 1-inch thick wood that looked like it had been salvaged from a fire. These were attached to the wall of the hallway with nails nearly the diameter of my pinky finger. After significant effort in removing these, I discovered something curious. There was another door. It had an old skeleton keyhole that had been stuffed with what appeared to be canvas and wax. The door also appeared to be locked, but it was difficult to confirm because the doorknob had been cut off. It was also nailed into the frame with the same sort of nails that were holding the burned slabs. Why was this done? I took a tape measure and measured the hallway, then measured the inside of the apartment and determined that there was about 4 feet of unaccounted for space between that door and the interior wall of the apartment. When I asked my mom's boyfriend what to do about it, he said that after months of working in that building, he didn't want to know what was in there and ordered me to cover it back up, which I did. That building still stands with people living in it to this day. Up until the point my mom sold it, we would routinely receive questions from the tenants about strange occurrences in the house. Are there old heating vents? I hear whispers in the back room. Do any other tenants have small children? I keep finding my kids in the hallway outside the apartment at night playing with a ball that isn't ours, and they say a girl wants to play. I need you to change the locks on my apartment. I saw a huge man in my kitchen last night, but the police say there's no sign of break-in. To this day, I still experience paranormal events no matter where I go in the world. But my reaction is more like the curious interest of someone spotting a squirrel in the park than your typical encounter reaction. While this is my reality, I actually don't believe in ghosts in the typical sense. When I was about 10 years old, I was in an accident and bled out to the point of being momentarily clinically dead. It was a very interesting experience that, due to an unusual quirk of my physiology, I did not go into a state of shock or lose consciousness and can recount the process in fairly precise detail. It's important to note that I had years of coexistence with these entities prior to this. It was not a catalyst moment. But I saw, for a moment, what waits for us on the other side, and find the concept of ghosts being the lingering spirits of the dead improbable. I do think there is some merit to the stone tape theory, as the entities I encounter are not exclusively human-like. I believe that whatever these are, they exist around us all the time. We've just trained our brains to filter them out like static or white noise. They're not inherently malicious or benign, they just are. And over the years, I've learned that there's always something there, just beyond what your conscious mind perceives. So if you're ever feeling lonely, just turn out the lights and say hello. Maybe something will say hello back.
The veil between the living and the dead is thinner than this commercial break.
I mean, finding a room sealed off with burnt wood and three exterior deadbolts is, to say the least, unsettling.
Makes you wonder what they're trying to hide behind all those layers.
Indeed it does, man. It seems like someone is always trying to deliberately hide things, like traditional big wireless carriers. They got so many spooky closets, it's like the Winchester Mansion, and you know what they love to hide?
Yeah, bogus fees, 5G proximity toll, excessive emoji processing tax.
Talking to a human convenience fee.
Exactly.
Well, we made those up, folks, but they're not too far off. We don't know about you, but we like keeping our money where we can see it, not disappearing into the void.
Truer words, my man. Well, my family got fed up with crazy high wireless bills, so we switched. And the service quality actually crushes our old big wireless provider. And we saved thousands of dollars since we first switched to Mint years ago.
Yeah, we've been using Mint Mobile for at least 8 years now, and we think you should too. Stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle.
So if you like your money and keeping an eye on it, Mint Mobile is for you.
Shop plans at mintmobile.com/DLO. That's mintmobile.com/DLO.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month.
New customer offer for first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Let's get back to unraveling this dead letter.
Well, it could be what I'm going to call Shut Your Eyes, Marion. We talked about this before Raiders of the Lost Ark, when Indiana Jones tells Marion not to look at what's happening to them opening the Ark, because he knows, even as an explorer or an academic, you're not supposed to see that. And that comes from that actually comes from the Bible. Do not look at the destruction of the city, because you will turn into a pillar of salt like Lot's wife.
Right.
You're not supposed to see the power or the how the sausage is being made or destroyed. So yeah, that's a heavy ancient theme where you're not supposed to see the mechanism of that for whatever reason.
Also, by the way, in the episode The Man Trap of the original Star Trek, there was that alien that would turn you into salt. Not a pillar, but a little cube of salt, I think.
Right. But that's the thing. You are not meant to look at the power of the Lord or the phenomenon itself like that. And there does seem to be a lot of cases, anecdotally, of course, there where people don't get something on film. They don't see something clearly. It happens when they're not looking.
You know what this reminds me of is when we were talking about on the main show about Danny Goeler's DMT experiments.
Right.
And then later, I think you and I saw after we did the show, I can't remember, but the one article that suggested there were groups of people that had been banned, like they were no longer allowed to see the code.
Yes. Well, that is a thing.
And they would take DMT and nothing would happen even?
Yeah, because it's a controlled experience. If you want to call them the little time elves, I think there's names for these entities now. Even in Sean Moss's Instagram clip where he talks about that, he and his friend both saw these little time elves. Like they were scared of his friend entering the space,
right.
And the friend was scared. And then he says, oh, you know Shane? Oh, yeah, he comes here all the time. And
right.
So there's right. another relationship with that. But other folks, you never know if any of these are true or accurate or people are just tripping or whatever. But I saw one guy on an Instagram clip who was pleading with anybody who had access to that realm that he got booted and he didn't know why. And there's no letter of redress. There's no reapplication process. That's it. You're gone until you raise your vibration and you get more serious about it. You know, you're not just in there recreationally. There's something, you're being shown something that has deep ontological meaning, I guess, is that you're not there just to like screw around with people like Beavis and Butthead, you know, like it's,
right.
Yeah, it's fantastical. It's an Alice in Wonderland kind of experience, but also there's some meaning to it and there's gatekeepers. And if you don't, if you're not there for the right reasons, you're not taking it seriously, you're irreverent, whatever your deal is, you can get booted. Of course, people would say like, no, you've just taken so much of it that you're just not used to it. Well, it's not like any other drug where it's like, yeah, it's dulled, but you still have some kind of experience, not totally shut out. Like, you know, that's it.
Right,
show's
right,
over.
Right.
You're back
right.
in your chair. Nothing happened at all. You know what I'm saying? Like there's
right.
tolerance to other drugs, even hallucinogens, but you still have some kind of experience. This is just very odd. But getting back to our story here about what's going on and when there's some, that's okay. So there is one curious thing where they just kind of freeze. There might be something to that where it's a natural response. Even a kid sneaking around, it's like somebody calls your name and you freeze. So maybe there is something to that, but I like that each entity had its own area and space. Another interesting aspect is that our author here is, as they said, they are part of the ASD or autism spectrum disorder community. And in that, you might be seeing some things, as they are alluding to, like unfiltered in a way, if that makes sense. You don't have the same set of lenses. You see the world a little bit differently. And that reminds me of one of my favorite and just kind of the chilling, bone-chilling accounts. And I think we may have talked about this on a Halloween show as one of our anecdotes here, but it was a father who was basically telling a black-eyed kid story. And these two weird kids came to the door, and his son was in the other room. And these two weird kids come to the door, and to the father, it's just like, well, they're odd-looking kids. But his son, who was on the autism spectrum and was in another room, and I think the kid was like 14, 15, that kind of age range, and just kind of lost it with abject fear and terror, just screaming over and again, don't let them in, don't let them in, Dad, don't let them in.
Right.
And he didn't even see them. He just sensed it. And I did wonder at the time, is like, is the son able to pick up some really bad mojo or vibe from these kids, not even having to be near them or answer the door, or even look at them? Something was being transferred. And so the dad did. It's like he closed the door, but like, yeah, it just really upset his son. So my point was that, like, you getting a feeling like, don't ever open this door. I want to know why that thing was bolted shut or just nailed shut.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
And what is it that is there an object in there that's the cause of this?
Yeah.
This is different in not so much what we've been told as far as the happenings, but the way it's perceived by Chris.
So I have a couple of things about this. Mm. One thing was, I think in our last dead letter or in a recent one, I mentioned my great-grandparents' house in downtown Raleigh in Boylan Heights. That house, which I loved and explored thoroughly, by the way, it was like, yes, it was a mansion of sorts, but they never had a lot of money. Most of the time that I knew them, they had tenants. They had people that they rented rooms out, different rooms out. It would be like a truck driver who's only in town a couple of times and stuff like that. Yeah, it was basically a boarding house, and then they lived on the main floor. But I got to explore it and go all these, and there's always a weird door that doesn't open, or like there's a lot of that. And not to belittle Chris's story, because it's like those things didn't come with vibes in that case. But I will say that old structures, a lot of times they have stuff like that. And I know that just from explorations and even, you know, minor investigations that we've done. But on the other hand, the way this one was secured, you know, it brings up two things. Well, maybe it's just a safety consideration. Maybe somebody was worried that a kid was going to get in there.
Well, yeah, like I told you, you know, like I said, there's dusty, like sharp said, things in there, you know, nails.
Or, you know, it's an old dumb waiter shaft or something, but which I thought about. But then a dumb waiter would go down through the second floor too, unless you removed the space that shaft occupied on the second floor and left the one on the third floor. And it was too small to be of practical use. So you just left it there. There's all these reasons that it might have been there. I did also want to point out with the burnt wood, there were two legendarily huge fires in Chelsea and Boston, like legendary, like still talked about today. There was the Great Chelsea Fire of 1908 on April 12th of 1908. And then there was another one in 1973, in October of 1973, which destroyed 18 blocks, 20% of the city. Started in an abandoned rag shop on Summer Street, only 200 yards away from where the 1908 fire started. But what I was going to say is, one of the things we've learned from the research and researching structures, and I've really learned a lot of new interesting things from the Dead Letter Office, actually, that are different from the stuff that we've learned from doing Astonishing Legends. But back in that time period, if you were trying to make repairs or do things in your home, you wouldn't think twice about repurposing burnt wood that was still structurally sound. If you're walking down the street and you're like, oh, I need to do some stuff back at my house, which didn't burn down.
Right.
Here's a big pile of 2x4s or the equivalent. Some of them are burnt, but I can take them back and finally close up that closet. So
we were
that
talking
might explain
about,
burnt wood.
Yeah, no, we were just talking about this in the last dead letter. With spolia. So it's a form
of spolia.
Yes,
exactly. Spolia. Yeah. Exactly. That happens. And I particularly know when I think about my great-grandparents' house and my great-grandfather in particular, who was born in 1913. So of, you know, similar time period to maybe this structure that Chris is writing in about. There was a whole lot of like duct tape and things happening in that house that would not necessarily be safe, but it was like whatever you could find, you MacGyvered it. And now even that's an old reference. If my great-grandfather had to make a repair, whatever he had in his little shop would be used to make that repair. And it might be 15 different kinds of nails and a burnt piece of wood and all of that kind of stuff. So that in itself doesn't seem super unusual to me. What's more unusual definitely is the emotional feeling from this room, and also all of the parallel feelings and the hauntings in general, which Chris is like, I don't believe in ghosts. So whatever it is that Chris is seeing or experiencing in that home, different kinds of things on different floors, to me, that actually carries more weight than the physical construction of this strange room. I feel like strange rooms exist in a lot of places. I mean, there's even subreddits dedicated to people who are like, what's this weird space? They open it up and, you know, there's a chair in it or whatever. And people are like, oh, it's a chair. It's a liminal space. And it's like, well, probably just somebody left the chair when they boarded this room up that they didn't want to use or air condition or pay to heat or have a child go into or whatever. So, you know, I take all of those kinds of things with a grain of salt. That said, all of the stories about this home and the different things experienced on the different floors, including the, you know, having to leave the toy out and the grandmother feeling very specific about the door being left open and all of these other rules. And so when Chris shut it, she got mad. So all of that stuff is pretty interesting to me in terms of what this was. But there's always something weird when you're like looking at a floor plan. I mean, my wife watches so much true crime.
Oh, geez.
We watched some show literally two nights ago about some guy who kidnapped an older couple, like the parents of a friend, but kept them alive and had them in a room in a basement. And the cops came. They were like, there's a tip. They're in the house. You need to go to that house and check it. They go to the house, search the whole house. Don't find anything. They're down in the basement, whatever. They come back out and it's like, no, something is going on. And then this FBI agent goes back down in the basement and he's like, wait a minute, this doesn't match the upstairs floor plan. There's a section here. It was all drywalled, not quite finished, but it just like there was a room in the basement that they couldn't tell was there because it had no openings at all.
Yeah.
And then what it turned out was the person, the kidnapper, and these folks were okay. Thank God. You probably look this case up. I think it's probably pretty famous. But they go upstairs and into this bedroom. They open the closet. Inside the closet, they lift up a thing that reveals a strong metal door. They have to bolt cut the lock. They pull that up. That goes down inside the room that is the one in the basement that has no openings or access inside the basement itself. And then they drop down in there, and this poor old couple is in there in the bed, just laying there hoping that maybe they'll be rescued. And the guy was scamming. He was using their... you know, sending them to take money out of bank accounts and all this stuff, just trying to get money from them. He's basically a con artist. So
wait a second. I have a question. Sorry, I know this is a tangent, but I need to know more. Yeah. Like, how long were they down there?
Well, I have to confess, I was doing a little bit of work while it was on, so I missed some of the details, but I think they were there for a couple of weeks. But it was at least a couple of days.
This person was a friend of the couple?
A friend of the family, a friend of one of the younger members of the family, and also like a valedictorian and something else. But he just like got... screwed up and kept getting in trouble. It was either gambling debt or something and just started like, and then had asked them for money at some point way in the past and they didn't loan it to him and he held a grudge about it. So then he came and kidnapped them after building this elaborate room. Circling back to my original point, the FBI agent, this is like a trained dude out of, you know, Quantico or whatever, is down there in that basement and could not tell there was a hidden room there. And so I guess what I'm saying is like a lot of times something can be hidden in a building and having been, you know, lived in New York and been in pre-war buildings also for a while and all that, there's all these little nooks and crannies. You don't even realize they're there until you try to spatially pull yourself out and be like, wait a minute, this room should
That's
be bigger.
That's what Chris saw. Whatever. Remember, he took the measurement and said, oh, you know what? This doesn't match the depth of the outer wall.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's something there.
Exactly. So there's something going on there. That said, to me, the more compelling part of the story, aside from just a kind of a boarded up room, is all of the weirdness in the home and the different very specific experiences with whatever these things are. Even further to maybe more mundane reasons, like the dog refusing to go into the basement. And if that's where a lot of people passed away, the dogs may just be smelling the smell of death, which they could smell for decades and decades afterwards. If a lot of people had passed away while having surgery in the basement. I could see that about the basement with the dog, even though I do believe dogs sense energy completely and that sort of thing. Also, I thought one of the most interesting things that Chris said that I could absolutely relate to was the idea of hearing whispers inside the white noise of passing cars. I was like, I love this sentence. I love the way it's written, and I love the idea of it. And I feel like I have experienced this before, not specifically with passing cars, but other kinds of environmental noises feeling like they had messages hidden in them.
Think about this. What if it was like the old-fashioned analog method of getting EVPs, where you have a tape player and you're having to play noise for the spirits to form words out of because they have no vocal cords. So you play fan noise, or I love this one because it's so specific. As I, years ago when I was starting to look into EVPs and trying to capture some, there's a file of backwards Portuguese crowd noise. Why it has to be Portuguese, I don't know.
But
that's people were passing around. Apparently it worked well. It's just crowd murmuring, but played backwards in Portugal. So, and then, or running water, or a fan, or TV static.
Right.
They need the sound there, that white noise type of sound, to form the words out of, or it could be static on the radio, or using somehow, it's like the Shack Hack, the SB7. Which skips
homemade Frank's
pie. It's skipping over at whatever rate you choose radio stations and either pulling out words or somehow forming words from the static. And here, what we're talking about is the car's passing in that moment provides enough white noise or static background for maybe not even intentionally, but like that's where you're able to hear the words forming because the spirit is there.
Yeah.
And they just get enough and they're already talking. It just gets formed into words there that Chris can hear. So that's a fascinating aspect of that. The other thing is that you had a note on here. Like I said, I have a lot more questions for Chris, but just it was never afraid of any of these entities except for one. And that's the mangled man that you want to talk about here. Every other person, like Chris says, is just an entity or something, or just part of a natural phenomenon that other people apparently can't see, but they can. And then, but nothing to be scared of except for the mangled man. And I don't know if it's because of the physical condition or if the entity known as the mangled man was putting out bad vibes or if it was something else. Like I said, that again, that's like Hill House where underneath the bed, the tall man comes in and like, you see the feet there and then looks under the bed. So it's like bending in a U shape somehow looking under the bed.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's not doing anything, but you don't want to see that. And is the grandmother, her rule to close the door because there's two ways to look at it. Chris didn't want the door open because Chris doesn't want to see that passing by and peeping in. But is the grandmother wanting to keep it open for Chris's safety? And like, if I have to rush in there, I don't want the door to be locked because that happened one time. Something like that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like keep it open in case... Yeah. I can't open the door. That's worse. So keep the door open so I can rush in there if I need to.
The other thing, too, with the aunt leaving, not his grandmother, but his aunt leaving the ball out and to assuage some kind of spirit, that's actually a global folklore thing, which it would be a whole episode in itself. But one particular archetype of that is the domovoy, which is Slavic folklore, or the British brownie, territorial household spirits that coexist with families. If respected and given minor offerings, like leaving a ball out for them, they remain docile and playful rather than malicious. But if you irritate them or you're disrespectful, all hell can break loose, including poltergeist-like activity. And there's some version of this in every culture. We've talked about it before,
you
know, like the house elves and that sort of thing. It's things that need to be respected. On the other hand, the counterpoint to that is, well, old structures that make a lot of noise that people don't understand, the noises carry further. And if you can't control it in any kind of way, maybe it feels like you get some sense of control by making an offering to it. Yeah. I don't know, whichever way it goes, but it is interesting that the aunt, when she would leave the ball out, apparently this thing would calm down to an extent. I think that's interesting. The other thing about the mangled man and the fact that Chris named it the mangled man, which is scary, doesn't really get into a lot more detail about why he called it the mangled man from a descriptive standpoint, but he had a clear sense of what it looked like or what it felt like it looked like. My thing is, in the history of our show, Dead Letter, Astonishing Legends, whenever somebody has had a thing in their home that they gave a name or a description to, that they later did historical research and were able to uncover potential candidates for what that thing was, I feel like a very high percentage of the time, they're right about either its name or its circumstances. For whatever reason, What I'm saying is there's like, oh, I just call that one Tom. And then like later, it's like, we did a bunch of research and there was a guy named Tom that actually lived here and he tripped down the stairs and broke his neck. Like there's that, the number of times that somebody has been like, well, we just call it that. Or the family just says it's this, or it looks like that. The number of times that research has come back, historical accurate research has said, well, there actually is a story connected to something just like that. So what worries me about the mangled man is, why is Chris thinking that he's the mangled man? What happened to this guy if there is a real world counterpart to that entity's existence?
Again, there's not enough, through no fault of Chris, that just explaining, extrapolating on this, because as it was described, they're wearing workman's clothes. It may have been an accident, fell off or got crushed.
Right.
And then, that is the sixth sense where you're kind of sporting the injury, or the show Ghosts.
Yeah.
You're kind of sporting the injury that you had. Was it Sir Lawrence? He had his head cut off. So he's just, a body always trying to look for the head, which has gone missing somewhere in the house.
Yeah.
Who knows? Like I said, I think there are a lot of different realities or situations for each person with some generalized rules. But getting back to that, I'm most intrigued, I think, about that unexplored closet, where obviously somebody is trying to keep somebody out. The thick slabs with the burnt wood, the doorknob was cut off, the keyhole stuffed with canvas and wax. They don't want somebody poking a key in there.
What's the reason for that? Because you've done enough to keep it from getting opened. Why do you need to stuff the
keyhole? Just so you don't have there's two reasons. You've seen an old, I'm sure a long time, Scott, but you've seen an old skeleton key, right?
Yeah, sure. From my great-grandparents' house, the aforementioned house, I still have a skeleton key.
Yeah, but do you have the lock? Do you remember those locks?
No, it was like—
Remember looking through the key, the expression, looking through the keyhole. There was no mechanism blocking that.
Yeah, you can look right through it.
And so you could put a key from either side through the same hole, so you could look through the keyhole.
Yeah.
Well, what if it was not just to block any key being inserted, but just so you could not look inside and something could not look out, just to seal it off completely. Yeah. So there's no hole. It's just, that's it. Nailed, as Chris was saying, 4 feet of unaccounted space. And the mom's boyfriend, like, I don't believe in ghosts, but we're not going in there ever. Don't, that's it. We're covered up.
Yeah. Here's the bigger question. Because with the inspectors I've had, if the inspector said, you got to do something with this closet, and you decided, no, you weren't going to do it, then you aren't going to pass inspection.
I know, again.
So more, I don't know what happened to the inspector.
Yeah, there's more questions about
it. Is the inspector in the closet?
Well, there you go. a past inspector. But it also could be, could it be the mangled man crushed or something in the, bricked up? Is it the cask of Amontillado?
Yeah.
What's going on in there where there's a skeleton and that's what's causing some of the spirits.
Literally a skeleton.
Yeah, literally. Well, that's where the term comes from, is that somebody's.
Here's the real nightmare. You go to bed and then you wake up inside.
Oh,
you don't know.
Well, that's, that is the, that is a fear. Like I said,
this is only April. We're doing
Halloween. Cause it's always spooky season, Scott. I hope you know that. I think we're halfway through to Halloween and getting close to it.
Oh yeah. I know that because I got invited. I think you did too, maybe to the halfway to Halloween show that our friend Brandon Schexnader is doing. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, in wrapping this out here, just again, what people are saying about this, the spookiest B&B ever, the boarding house.
Yeah.
Obviously, the stories are backed up by people staying there, renting the place. You know, they're hearing whispers. The kids are playing with some girl at night, seeing the man in the kitchen. You know, all these things are kind of backed up, aside from the family who, again, the mother would tell the stories about the people. And it's like, it's just an accepted thing. The grandmother's accepting it. The handyman boyfriend, the contractor, is having a little harder time accepting that. Just board that up. So, but again, it's like, it's how you perceive these things, especially as a child. I remember my mom took me to one of her friend's house and off the kitchen, they had a door that, went down to an unfinished basement I was really intrigued with. And I think the mom's friend said, oh, you don't want to go down there. There's ghosts, which of course, not knowing me, that'll frighten them off. I was duly wanting to really now want to go down there to see some ghosts. What kind of ghosts?
Yeah.
Can I talk to them? What's happening down there? And it's like that, it's a shot in the movie where it just gets dark with the pole string light. And she was like, don't go down there. But I didn't, because I also, as a child, realized when an adult tells you not to do something, there could be another reason for it. You know, like I said,
Exactly.
It's like, oh, well, she's probably saying that because I could trip. The stairs are tall.
There's a chainsaw.
Yeah, there's sharp objects, gasoline, bell jars, whatever. Yeah. Don't go poking around there. So out of respect for that, I did not go down there. Also, she told me not to. It's her house. But it intrigued me. But I also kept to the rule. Here in the closet, I would definitely bust that thing open. Unless there was something telling me like this, again, it's like somebody being buried in there or the last DLO. Like there's something spiritually you are not supposed to be violating or disrespecting, desecrating. Mm-hmm. So I would also kind of leave it closed. But anyway, but getting back to our points here as we're wrapping up, it's a very fascinating story about specifically for all the things that were happening and also for Chris's perspective on this, about how to treat this. Yeah. And so my last thought on it is just that, they will buy into the idea of the stone tape theory, perhaps. You just coexist with them. I believe that totally. Like, that's just part of life. Or what Edgar Casey said, like, it's not, your car doesn't have to be haunted to get EVPs in it. That's just life. They're everywhere. Why wouldn't they be? Some are stuck in one place or one room or one closet, some roam around. It's just like people. Yeah. Some people are stuck in a basement getting money bilked out from them. Who knows? Yeah. But, and I don't know, I think specifically that truth to Chris and their experience of nearly dying was what they were meant to see or be shown. I'm not sure it's like that for everyone, just because my feeling is that, I've had encounters where I thought they were something more akin to ghosts or spirits of people who used to be alive. And as they said, they're not exclusively human-like, as Chris said. That's interesting. And we've just trained our brains to filter them out like static or white noise. Like they were saying earlier, the passing noise of cars lets you a glimpse on that. And Chris's condition that maybe they are able to perceive these things much clearer than the rest of us, or just maybe in a different way. But they said they're not inherently malicious or benign. They just are. Although, so admittedly, like the mangled man, sometimes they're scary. Yeah. And so, if you're ever feeling lonely, just turn out the lights and say hello. Maybe something will say hello back. Well, that's if you want a response. As a lot of ghost hunters will say, don't ghost hunt in your own house.
Well, it's fascinating to consider that the things that go bump in the night might just be the baseline hum of the universe, completely ignoring us as we try to ignore them. We spend so much time building walls, locking doors, trying to compartmentalize the unknown, just like whoever put those three heavy deadbolts on the outside of that hidden third floor room. But as Chris's life shows us, you can't lock out something that is woven into the fabric of reality. Maybe the ultimate comfort isn't in believing we're completely alone in the dark, but in accepting that we're just sharing the space with things we don't yet fully understand. If we can drop the fear, maybe we just find neighbors of a different sort. We truly appreciate you sharing your lifelong journey with us, Chris. We want to hear about that basement, so you can go ahead and send that one in now. And thank you for sharing it from your unique perspective. That made it very interesting for us. And thank you again for sending your story into the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Farris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolton. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards. May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.